Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
And good morning and another episode of Happy Hour here. Thank you so much for joining us on 92.9 WBPM with Jonna Spilbor, Carol Pesci, and myself. I'm Frankenberry. And hello again, ladies, over the telephone, as is the new normal now.
It is.
Hopefully not forever.
Well, yeah, like you said, you know, it's nice to have all three of us in the same room sharing our germs, but...
I miss your germs, especially, Frankenberry.
Just don't say that out loud for Craig to hear. He might take that the wrong way. And kick my ass in the process.
Oh, yeah, I miss seeing your faces.
Yes, it has been a while.
I know, right? You know, and I hate that we're unable to say hello, Frankenberry, in glorious symphony at the beginning of every third segment because we're not seeing each other.
Well,
maybe we'll get it this time. We got to say it right away. No pause. No one, two, three or four. Just right away. Today we're going to get it right. We're going to get totally right today.
Okay. All right. That sounds good to me. Now, Jonna, I am going to mention that I recently saw a Facebook post of yours where you are running for office and also enjoying the sunshine on the top of your building.
Well, now, hang on. Don't get everybody excited, because the moment you say I'm running for office, I know everyone's going to try to get to their voting booth and vote for me, and then they're not going to see my name. Here's what I'll say is happening as the summer is, well, today, right? I think the first day of summer might be today. I'm not quite sure. But I have this glorious little oasis on top of my building in the city of Poughkeepsie that we try to keep nice with flowers and fake turf. We have a barbecue. And when the sun has been so nice this entire week and for a couple weeks, I use it as an actual office. I come up here with my laptop and my phone, and I work away. And I got sort of daydreaming the other day, and I thought, man, wouldn't it be nice if an ice cream truck would show up here every day at noon? And then I just took that fantasy a bit farther, and I'm like, why don't I run for office? And then I can make that happen. Don't you think?
Well,
I thought there was more to that. It wasn't just an ice cream truck. Well, okay. So it's not just an ice cream truck, but it would be an ice cream truck that would also serve skinny margaritas.
Oh, okay.
And I think keep the menu a little bit limited. Ice cream, like maybe just ice cream cones, plus skinny margaritas, noon, every day, in front of my office. But here's the kicker. It wouldn't just be in the summer. That's ordinary. It would be 365 days per year. Because sometimes you feel like ice cream in December. And sometimes you feel like having a skinny margarita at noon in January. So why the heck not?
You know, so I think there's one joy for me, and I think for many of us, from childhood that feeling I will always be able to remember, and that is the excitement of hearing that ice cream man coming, right? Like you would lose your mind, start running in circles, trying to ground up some coins to run out to the street and catch the ice cream man. And like Christmas morning, I just remember what that felt like. It was so exciting. And if I could have the equivalent of that where I hear the ding, 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 and we'd have to find the right tune, the right music for it, and I knew it was a margarita truck coming as an adult, I could relive that amazing experience as a
Now,
I could relive that amazing experience from childhood with alcohol. Nice.
Exactly. But we have to pick the right song. Like, instead of the do-do-do-do-do-do, like, instead of that, we need Wasted Away in Margaritaville,
you could have
Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Van Halen,
huh?
Ice Cream Man.
Or Van Halen.
Some steel drums, right? Like the.
Oh, like you mean like
steel drums?
Like we're on an island somewhere?
Yes.
And you know what, Jonna, what would be great you know, you use this as your platform, but you use it as your only platform. Remember a couple of years ago when like 3 million people were running for a mayor of New York, and a lot of them just had really weird single topic platforms? This is yours. Nothing else. Just the ice cream truck.
Just this.
Yeah, that's
just
it.
Just like the rent is too damn high. Remember the rent is too damn high?
Yes, I do.
You're right, Frank. You know what? You got to narrow. I think you can get a bigger audience. The more narrow your niche, the bigger your audience. Who's totally into that. Skinny margaritas and ice cream with good non-ice cream truck music.
There you go.
Boom.
There you go. Just add one more item to the ice cream and make sure there's ice cream sandwiches available.
Oh, for you?
Yes, for me. Those are my fave.
Ice cream sandwiches?
Yeah.
What did you guys like best from the ice cream truck when you were a kid?
I liked the, what did you call it? The creamsicle, the orange and the vanilla? I'm so sorry, Spillboard. But that was my favorite. You asked. What about you, Carol?
I would have to say one of the ones I loved best was the ice cream cone that had a gumball on the bottom.
What?
I don't remember that.
Instead of a wafer cone, it was like a paper cone. And when you got done with your ice cream, there was a gumball all the way in the bottom.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I don't remember that at all.
You guys are probably too old.
Oh, thank you so much. and I guess cones would be yours, Jonna?
No, I actually liked sundaes, but it would depend whether I was in a chocolate mood or a strawberry mood. But when I was in the mood to have blue lips, I always got a bomb pop.
Oh, I remember the bomb pop.
Remember the bomb
pop? Oh, yeah.
What about strawberry shortcakes? They were good.
Oh, yeah. They were. They were. I even remember the picture on the packaging.
And the Nutty Buddies. Oh, man. Now I'm... See? I got to hurry up and run from my ice cream truck office.
And we definitely got to expand the menu.
Oh, wait, guys. I just thought of a fantastic idea. Part of my campaign, I'll be on the campaign trail in an ice cream truck to really hit the message home. What do you think?
I will be your driver.
Oh, yes. And Frank, there, you could serve the ice cream. I'll have the bullhorn just telling people what I'm running for.
Okay.
Frank Berry serves the ice cream. We got it. This is great.
Oh, yeah.
I got to get myself on the ballot for, like, November somehow.
Yeah.
Yep, that would be nice. And I'm voting for you. There's nothing partisan involved with ice cream and skinny margaritas.
No. Oh, this is great. Oh, I can't wait. I don't really know exactly what position I'm running for, you know? It's not like mayor or president or governor. It's just like the ice cream chick, you know? Like that.
Yeah.
Unopposed. The ice cream and skinny margaritas.
Oh, I got it. No. You're running for a queen of Candyland.
Oh,
nice.
Yep.
Yeah. Boom.
Here you go.
Man.
Oh, she's like off in dreamland right now. We got to give her a minute, Frank and Barry.
I'm glad we sewed that up. Okay, we can move on to another topic. I actually, this one is less fun, but I wanted to talk to you guys about something today that wasn't just like a story that happened to me. It was something that I heard, and I wanted to open up a discussion. But it's not exactly a happy topic. Are you guys down for that? Or
oh, sure. Let's bring this joyous ice cream truck and margarita truck and talk about something sad. Okay,
just,
go.
Yes, just to bring it to a crashing halt.
Let's just flatten the tires. Okay. So this is kind of interesting. So I was having a conversation with somebody, and you know, this whole I get this whole COVID thing for some has really had some people isolated and others not so much, right? Some people have, and with good reason, have been kind of locked up and not seeing a lot of people in real life. And then you have a situation like my grandma, for example, who's in a nursing facility, and I haven't been able to see her now in three solid months. And, you know, the only contact she can have is with the coworkers there who are fantastic. But so everybody's situation has been a little bit different. And I was having a conversation with somebody who, just so happened to be on day one, it was a man, He was on day one of a breakup with a woman who he's been with for 5 years. So now imagine, you know, you're coming out of this kind of COVID thing. You've been in a long-term relationship. You break up. It's day one. And we were conversing about that. And the topic turned to feeling lonely. And the reason why this part of the conversation kind of got to me is because he was talking about, you know, oh, and I want to reach out. I want to call her, but I said I'm not going to call her for a long time. And, you know, and I got this feeling of loneliness. And I started to analyze what lonely means because, sidebar, I spend a lot of time alone, but I rarely, if ever, feel lonely. So I say to him, I said, listen, let me ask you just a blunt question. Why feel lonely? Now, he took that to mean, you know, like, why don't you, you know, make a booty call? That's not what I meant at all. I'm like, no. I had a backtrack. I'm like, I'm not just saying call anybody randomly to spend time with. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying, why actually feel what lonely feels like? Like, how, when you're alone, why not feel something better? Why not feel creative? Why not feel gratitude? Why not feel hungry? Why not feel something? And that just got me thinking, and I wanted to ask you guys specifically, like, what do you think creates, why do some people be alone and they don't feel lonely, and some people can feel lonely even when they're in a crowd? Like, what is that? What evokes the feeling of loneliness? Let's start with the happiness expert.
I'm raising my hand. Okay. It's my turn. Okay. I'm going to guess, because I'm with you, I seldom feel lonely. I'm okay by myself. Like, even when my husband has to travel for a week, I'm always happy when he comes home, of course, and I don't want to be that all the time, but I'm okay by myself. So mm-hmm. I seldom experience loneliness, but I think it might be a fear-based thing. Like, you fear that it's going to last forever and that you're never going to be with someone. So that it's a fear-based loneliness rather than, yeah, nobody's around today. That's cool. I'm fine. I'll do what I want. I don't know. That's my guess.
I think sometimes what gets added to it, if you do start feeling lonely, is when you've got enough time by yourself. Maybe the world isn't the greatest, like your friend there who is on the first day of a breakup, and you get a little melancholy, and I think that lends itself to feeling lonely.
Could be a personality thing, too. You know, like certain, like, I think this lockdown has been harder for you than for me and Frankenberry. You're very social.
Right.
You like going out and being around other people. That's inherent in your personality. So maybe for certain people are just wired that way.
Well, you know what I was thinking? I agree that I think the feeling of loneliness is fear-based because I think all uncomfortable feelings at the root are fear-based. And I am an only child, and I don't know if maybe by design that when you're an only child, you are alone a lot and you figure out ways to occupy yourself and loneliness doesn't really creep in there. But what I feel is I don't feel lonely when I feel bored, like especially like during this lockdown, you know, but it's painful. Like boredom to me is extremely painful. So maybe boredom is a form of loneliness. But when I've got nothing to do and I've shut off and I'm not feeling creative and I get really agitated when I'm bored. Does that happen to anybody?
I can see that with you.
Yeah, I can see that with you as well. I mean, I usually, you know, I was telling Jonna earlier before we started recording here that I took an extra day this past weekend, and Jonna noted that I do take Mondays off on occasion. And for me, that's, you know, just looking forward to an extra day of doing my thing. It just makes me so happy. So I very rarely get bored. Because I make sure to give myself something to do. I make sure that I look forward to sitting down at the computer and seeing if I can come up with something most of the time out of thin air, or just, you know, start with one sentence and then you go from there. But so I don't get bored very often.
Really? All right. So you would say, would you say you get lonely? You get lonely from time to time, but you don't get bored very frequently.
That, especially when I lived in Hyde Park, when I lived by myself up on the third floor, yes, there were times where I definitely got lonely up there. And it's different now that, you know, with this apartment, with being able to say hi to somebody every single day on my way in, with all the animals, I definitely don't feel lonely. Heck, all I have to do is hear Bella the bird get all the dogs howling and I'm not going to be lonely, you know. So so this living situation is a little bit different than that one, because that was definitely some real solitude, that apartment.
Very interesting, because I'm exactly the opposite. I don't get lonely very often, but I get bored a lot. Huh. Okay.
Well, that's what
and
your Facebook posts are
for. You probably don't get either. Yeah.
I don't experience either one of those.
You don't get bored or lonely. So
no.
What do you get?
I mean, what do you get?
you gotta get something.
What do you for something negative?
I was just going to say the same thing. You got to get something negative. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Come on, give me something. No, I really don't, especially more recently. I don't know, for whatever reason, like in the last year or two, I have found myself just more content with what is. Like, more present, less, like, striving to get the next thing done so I feel like I'm enough. I've settled down, so, and I'm good, I'm happy, I'm content. For the most part, you know, I get agitated or, you know, certain normal things, but I seldom get bored and I never feel lonely.
All right, so let me ask you both this question. Let's fast forward to, I don't know, maybe like another few weeks or so. And let's fast forward to, let's pretend that everything has reopened, including everything, concerts, baseball games, restaurants, malls, movies, all of it. Let's not fast forward. Let's rewind. Let's rewind to like March 15th, right?
Yes.
When the world was what it was. What's going to be the first thing you do that you haven't been able to do in the last 3 months, but you're really looking forward to doing? Carol.
God. I'm a little bit at a loss. I don't know. Maybe go out and
nothing,
have a
nothing that you miss, like something that you say to yourself, I really miss.
Yeah, maybe go have a cocktail outside, like at the Roundhouse and Beacon or something. But it's not like, oh, I can't wait for that either. So
gotcha.
I don't know.
Well,
I mean, and, you know, I will say this. So periodically, a few times a year, you, Jeannie Kelly, and me would get together either up here or down the city for a girls' night to catch up and have a really nice dinner and some really good wine, and I loved those experiences. So that would be up there. Okay, that's my final answer.
You know, for me, the one thing that I miss, and I can live without going to a baseball game in the long run, because you guys know me. I mean, I'm not... antisocials, you know, that's right in my wheelhouse. So it's not like I went out a lot before this at all. You know, anyway, I think I've seen one show in probably the last 10 years. So, but yeah, the Pirates were scheduled to play the Mets down in the city in May. That was a little disappointing, you know, and I miss baseball. That is the one thing. I miss sitting at home at night, being able to have my tablet there with the game on, no volume, maybe watching some TV, hanging with the girls. That's the only thing that I miss, is possibly seeing a ball game.
Donna.
I think that's big. I think that's, well, you stole my answer. I miss our girls' night, whether it's in the city or here, just, you know, hanging with you and Jeannie and chatting business and ideas. Like, I really miss that. It's not the same when you try to do it on Zoom, and I'm grateful that we were able to do that a couple of times. I just miss the connection with my friends, like the face-to-face with friends and a cocktail and being able, because to me, that's not just about, it's about our friendship, obviously, but it's also about being able to sort of vent and release all the stuff that you go through on a weekly, daily, monthly basis to people who understand and can really help you process through it in a fun way. Like, to me, that's really important. So I miss that.
Yep, I can see that. I can see that.
Well, you know, you just got to be prepared to shift things when you need to, you know?
Let me see. Is it coming? Is it coming?
No, let me tell you what Carol's platform's going to be when she runs for office. She's going to be the queen of Segoo Land.
Oh, God.
All right. So that with that, that was a really good one. Okay, so what Carol is referencing is after the break, we are going to be talking to the author of a new book entitled Shift Happens. No job, no money, now what? How to reinvent yourself using 3D thinking. And you guys know we've been kind of focusing on people who are sort of lockdown related and helping our audience sort of get a grip and maybe reinvent themselves and quote, reimagine, even though I hate that word, themselves during this lockdown and as we emerge therefrom. So our author today is James Feldman, and he's written several books, but this one is really, I think he actually wrote it during the lockdown. So it's like hot off the press. I think it's probably available yesterday or today. It's the first day you're going to be able to get it. So when we come back, we'll be talking with author and speaker James Feldman about Shift Happens.
All right, that sounds good. You are listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. We have our guest on the way, so stick with us. This is 92.9 WBPM.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And we are back with segment number two here in Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. And of course, segment number two is always where we bring a guest your way. And Jonna, we've been trying to make sure that these guests kind of offer some help for this current situation that we're in.
Yeah. So since we've been in this, quote, unprecedented time for 3 solid months now, we've been really focusing on bringing our audience people and experts and authors and speakers who can help us, you know, tread these waters, navigate these waters. And today we have a really, I think, a great guest to help us do just that. So we have author and speaker and bright idea guy, James Feldman. Now, James has more initials after his name than there are letters in the alphabet. So I'm going to move on and tell you that he is a master innovator and advisor to hundreds of organizations, which include little teeny tiny organizations you've probably never heard of, like Toyota, Xerox, AT&T, Apple, MGM, Foxwoods Casinos, Coca-Cola, and Marriott, to name a few. He was named one of Incentive Magazine's top innovators, and his latest book, which I think is going to be released like today, if not yesterday, I love the title. It's called Shift Happens, No Job, No Money, Now What? Reinvent Yourself Using 3D Thinking by James D. Feldman. James, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
So as you just heard, we've been really focusing on guests that can help us all. Like, and we were talking in the segment before you joined us today about, you know, this lockdown, this pandemic has really affected people in a whole lot of different ways. Like, some people aren't affected as much and some people are affected incredibly, and we're still not out of it completely yet. But you wrote is it true? Correct me if I'm wrong. Did you write this book during the pandemic? Like, you sat down on day one and finished it up? Like, how did this book come about?
Well, it came about because, like everybody else, I was shuttered at home. All of my advisory and speaking engagements got either canceled or put on hold. And I decided I would use this time to be more productive and sit back and say, what are we all experiencing? And I came up with the name Thinkrupsy. We're going through Thinkrupsy.
Oh,
if you think about all the things that the government has done or not done, and I'm not trying to be political, and how we are now emerging from this with some of the stupidity that's going on, I said, you know, here's a chance to really reinvent yourself. Here's a chance to realize that the playing field for almost every business, every service industry has been leveled. And you can come back and really recraft what's going to go on and how this will impact your future.
I completely agree. And as a small business owner, the impact to me has been slightly different than for my co-host. And one of the questions that I have been asking myself for the last several weeks is, do I want my business to go back to exactly the way it was? Or do I want my business to look different? Do I want to make my business pandemic-proof? And I struggle with that question because I don't want to run a business from a place of paranoia. Like, if this ever happens again, then I'm ready. But I want to be smart and make sure the time has not been wasted. Like, I'm jealous that you sat down and wrote a book. I would have loved to have done that in the last 3 months. So what do you think? What do you, like, for example, one of your phrases, and I'm on your website right now, is to think inside the box, whereas most people say think outside the box. What do you mean by think inside the box?
If we use the metaphor of the box and you're outside the box and the problem is inside the box, how can you possibly identify the problem, the components that make up the problem, and ultimately the solution? And that's what continually gets us in trouble. We are so removed from identifying the problem that we come up with great solutions to the wrong problems.
That totally makes sense. That absolutely positively makes sense. So, and I guess that would apply, obviously it would apply to people who own businesses, but I think you could almost apply that thinking to any dilemma, for lack of a better word, that happens to us, right? Whether you're having a relationship problem, a business problem, any sort of a money problem. Am I wrong?
Well, it's like having an argument with your significant other. She or he comes in and goes, you did this, you did this, you did that, and you say, you're absolutely right, it'll never happen again. That whole conversation is over because you have agreed to whatever it was bothering them, but you really don't know what you've agreed to.
That's it.
The possibility of doing it again without knowing that you've done it is pretty solid, as opposed to, I don't know what you're angry about. Please explain it to me, and then we can have a relevant conversation. And this is really one of the reasons that we're always in trouble, because as somebody said, men are from Mars and women are from Venus, we're always trying to come up with the answer, but we're not trying to articulate and define the problem.
So is that in line with one of the premises in your book that you talk about is to talk about thinking how you think, not what you think? Now, that's a pretty fine line distinction. What do you mean by that?
Well, let me say it's not a fine line, and I'll tell you why. What you think is learning facts, learning things that may or may not be applicable. How to think is what you're going to do with those facts and how you're going to apply them. Let me give you a really short example. When I was 7 years old, I went to my parents and I asked for an allowance. My mother said, go talk to your father. I went to my father and I said, I'd like an allowance. He said, go talk to your mother.
Oh, gosh, I remember that.
Rule number one, at 7 years old, I realized you had to get all the decision makers in the room at the same time. That's a really important business lesson that I learned when I was seven. Now, they all came up with, you know, suggestions. Go mow the yard, go walk the dog, go wash the car, open up a lemonade stand. And I went outside, and I saw a lemonade stand on every single driveway up and down the street. Now, that's not unusual. You know, every kid gets outside, and, you know, now it's a price war, now it's, you know, what's the marketing, are you going to get cookies with it, you name it. What I thought about is that every single mother was going to have to go get the ingredients to make the lemonade. It's another trip to the store. So instead, I talked my mother into taking me to a wholesale place where I priced out bulk lemonade, bulk sugar, bulk paper cups, and little Ziploc bags, and I made lemonade kits. Night, when it was cool, I knocked on the door, and I said, hi, Mrs. Jones, do you need a lemonade kit today? She goes, oh, absolutely. Thanks for saving me the trip. At the end of that summer, at 7 years old, I had a net profit of $351.
That's huge.
For a seven-year-old kid, absolutely.
That's brilliant.
Well, now hang on a second.
And so that's a really good example of not the content, but the structure of your thinking, right? And
that's correct.
Comes down a lot down to what kinds of questions are you asking, right? If you want to change how you think, I think asking new questions. And that's what you did at 7 years old.
Well, I have, and you've seen it before. This is not so unusual. You know, I ask myself, what if? What's next? What's possible? And why not? And the problem with all that is when you try to explain that to somebody, they always respond with, yes, but. And the but is what stops progress. If they would say, yes, and, then it would be additive. And so I'm constantly sitting in rooms asking questions. I love it when I get in with corporate executives that are making more money than I am and have more power than I do, but they're so mired in their inability to articulate the problem. Once you identify the problem, 9 out of 10 times the solution is easy.
So maybe they need to hire more 7-year-olds, because I think it's pretty brilliant that at that young age you were able to deconstruct the issue for a solution. I really do. I think it's brilliant.
I think that you've really hit it on the head. That is, the deconstruction means you cannot be outside the box. If you are outside the box, you do not know what's in there. You do not know what the issues are. You do not know what the components are. And interestingly enough, once you can identify the components and move them out of the shadows, 9 out of 10 solutions are the simple reordering, simple math, multiplication, division, add, and subtract the components, and you typically come up with a solution. Stop doing this and do more of that. You want to lose weight? Stop eating. Do more exercising. Duh. There's no magic to losing weight. It's the reverse of how you put the weight on.
Well, then, what would you say to somebody who can... Okay, you're identifying the problem, which helps you come up with the solution, but that's not all there is to it, because then, like you just alluded to, you have to have the motivation to go ahead and actually do the thing that you know is going to give you the desired result. And I think a lot of people get, like why didn't I write a book during this lockdown? But you did. You know, I didn't have the motivation.
Well, you know, there's always the motivation, but let's look at the 3D thinking, and that's what inside the box is to me. So the first thing is go inside the box. The first D is depth. What's in here? Now, pretend you're inside the box. And you stick your head out of the box, and you can look around 360 degrees. And the first question to ask is this a problem that other people see and they're willing to pay for the solution? If you're working on the solution to a problem that nobody cares about, you're wasting your time. Those are called hobbies.
Right.
If you have articulated the problem, because everybody's out there going, how do we this, how do we that? Then you say, well, then the second part of this is distance. How far can we take this? Will people pay for my wisdom? One of my lines that I have used over and over is knowledge is free. People pay for wisdom. If you want knowledge and you want to do brain surgery, you can go find a YouTube that says this is how you do brain surgery. Would you go to somebody who learned how to do brain surgery on YouTube? Would you do it for yourself?
Well,
probably not.
No.
But if your question is, I know you do brain surgery. How many have you done? I've done 8,000. How many people are still alive? 8,000. How many of the people have all their faculties? 8,000. Do you then want to put it out for bid and go to the lowest bidder? Or do you give it to the guy who's got this kind of track record? And it eliminates what everybody says is, well, I'm competing on price. If you are competing on price in anything that you do, you're going to lose. Because everybody can come in at a lower price, period.
Yep.
I don't care what it is.
Yep. Yeah, especially in my business, too. You know, I completely get that. But then what do you do? How do you compete? So let's say you're in a pool. Let's say you're not the brain surgeon who has 8,000 successful brain surgeries and hasn't lost a single patient. What do you do? What do you do if you're one of 1,000 brain surgeons who's done 8,000 brain surgeries, but they only all have 7,000 living patients? Like, how do those people compete?
What is it that we're willing to pay for? We're willing to pay for solutions. And the more you charge, typically, the more expertise is applied to that charge. Listen, if all we needed was a car, then Mercedes, BMW, Lamborghini, Ferrari couldn't sell a car. Because at the end of the day, a car is to get you from point A to point B. The guy who's buying a Lamborghini could care less about getting from point A to point B. He just wants to be seen in the Lamborghini. He just wants to be standing next to it because it gives him a certain status. And for that, he or she is willing to pay for that status. It's got nothing to do with transportation. So what we need to do is leverage the insights of yesterday and try to apply them to what's happening now. And the good news is none of them have faced the current issues that we've just gone through. The shutdown of every state, the feeling of hopelessness in a time where hope is so desperately needed. We're facing the digitization of work in every industry, every sector, every person. 6 months ago, if you said Zoom, they probably thought you were whitening your teeth.
Yeah. Now we're Zooming everything.
You're Zooming everything. Now, let's say, for conversation, you're a mature adult. I have a client, very, very successful one. She cannot understand the difference between Facebook and FaceTime. It's driving her nuts. You said something earlier about be childlike. What do children do that drive adults crazy? They ask questions.
Why?
Why, Mom?
Why?
Right.
Exactly.
And pretty soon you get to the basic genetic answer, which is go figure it out for yourself and come back to me. Because nothing is more important than good information. How would you like to be in the hospitality business? How would you like to own a restaurant? How would you like to own an airline? The government made a huge mistake in giving the airlines money. What the government should have done is bought up more oil, stored the gas, the fuel on the airports or in the areas that are not being utilized, and then given the fuel to the airlines so that the airlines could reduce their operating costs. It's a win-win. But instead, they're going to write them a check, which they've done, and now the airline people are paying themselves, and they're not passing it along to the consumer. If I was consulting to the airline industry, I'd say the first thing you need to do is to go back to an all-inclusive ticket. No more of this, we're going to charge you where you sit, we're going to charge you how much you put on the plane, blah, blah, blah. The planes are flying at 50% capacity. What difference does it make if I bring a 51-pound bag or a 58-pound bag? Nothing. What difference does it make where I'm going to sit? The plane is half empty. Put it back to the time when I buy a ticket at $295, I'm not getting nickel-dimed. And let that go for 6 months or 8 months until we get back to, quote-unquote, the new normal, which I don't think we're going to get back to. I think we've gone back too early. I think we're going to see another resurgent, and I hope I'm wrong. I really do.
Yeah, I do. I do, too. I think the people will rise up if that were the case, because this has been a really difficult time. But I don't want to dwell on that because I'm going to bring this interview down. What's your third D?
The third D is your determination. If when you're in the box, you don't have either the bandwidth or the financing to carry it out of the box and deliver it to the market, you should stop. Let's talk about writing a book. Did anybody wake up this morning say, gee, I hope Jim Feldman wrote a book? No. The book is a book of solutions. The book is not a feel-good. It's not a motivational book. It's a book that says, somewhere in here is a pony. Somewhere in here is the answer for you to ask more questions. And I'm going to give you so many resources, so many suggestions, so many links, so many infographics that it's there. It's really sitting inside there somewhere. And I even have a little guide at the front that says, if you are time crunched, here's a cheat sheet at the beginning of the book to take you to the page that says the butler did it, or whatever you're looking for.
Wow. You did that because you identified a problem that people like me and everybody in this lockdown was having, and this is your solution.
Well, because people are afraid to fail, and what they are worried about isn't something they should worry about, because failure is the second cousin to success. There isn't anybody who's been incredibly successful that doesn't point to some big failures. You know, I mean, Walt Disney and Charles Schulz from Peanuts both got thrown out of school because they were doodling all the time. Steve Jobs didn't make it through college. I mean, you start to look at all of these things and you start to say, what's really going on? I'll give you one that everybody loves. I say, you know, an entire chapter, take your shifts to investors. Most people would say, take your shifts to the bank. Why are you going to take it to the bank? The bank isn't going to give you the money. We all know that the banks aren't there to give money to people who need money. So let's play the game. Here's a well-kept secret. Banks will review your business plan and then tell you why they won't give you the money. If you have crafted it properly, then you can ask them, well, do you have customers that may have been successful in this business? And the bank will then offer suggestions for free. You're not going to get the loan, but you're going to get the advice. And it's the only time you'll get something for free from the bank other than a paperclip or an envelope.
Or a lollipop. Yeah, I know.
Ah, you beat me to it.
This is fantastic. Now, hang on a second, James, because your book, I know your book is going to be available on Amazon, but what day does it actually drop? Because this show is going to be airing on Father's Day. When is the book going to be available for our audience to buy?
It is at the printer today.
It is.
The,
okay.
The official release date will be June 18th. For somebody that's dying a habit, I've already got the ebook ready to go. But one of the interesting things that this book includes is a half hour of one-on-one consulting. So let me address that very quickly. If I'm going to be on a New York Times bestseller, I got to sell 5,000 books. That means 2,500 hours of free consulting. There's no way I can do that. So I went to consultants who are out of work. And I said, hey, if I can give you a free lead to somebody who specifically is looking for your expertise, would you invest 30 minutes of time with that person? If you get business out of it, great. Well, Jim, what do you want for it? Listen, if you get a lot of money, remember where you got it. If you don't, I'm not going to worry about it because I did sell one or two more books. So I already have 60 consultants signed up that are just waiting for people to avail themselves of the 30 minutes of one-on-one coaching. What is that worth?
Wow, very nice.
That's
there's
genius.
There's your competitive differentiation. My book is $50. People go, oh, my God, $50. I go, wait a second. You're getting a half hour of consulting with that. If the guy is charging $100 an hour, it's a wash. I don't know very many consultants that are worth their salt that only charge $100 an hour. So
wow.
The premium in the box is better, maybe, than the book itself. Now, that's not true. But if you're sitting there saying, I don't have the $50, you look at it and say, what's the value proposition? Well, for $50, I get a book that's chock full of powerful ways to magnify your chances of winning out of this mess that we're in. And I get some one-on-one coaching.
I just think that's brilliant. I absolutely do. And I can't wait to get my hands on a copy of the book. And this has just been really, really enlightening. And I think our audience is really going to want to dig in too. So we know that they can go to Amazon to get your book, but also, James, your website, tell me if this is your main website, that's aptly entitled shifthappens.com. That's where they can learn more about you and your other resources?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic.
And to make it easy to get to Amazon, it's jfa.tips, TIPS/Amazon. It'll take you right to the page. So it's jfa.tips/Amazon. And every tip that I give at the back of the book starts off jfa.tips/, so you don't get these long URLs.
Oh, that's perfect. Well, I can't thank you enough. This has been really, really enlightening, and I know it's only the tip of the iceberg, no pun intended, but we've been speaking with author, speaker, bright idea guy, James Feldman, author of Shift Happens, which by the time you are hearing this, folks, will be available on Amazon and is available in ebook right now, too. So, James, we really, really appreciate the help. Thank you for, I think you're going to be very beneficial in helping a lot of us emerge from this, quote, unprecedented time. And we really love talking with you today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes, I appreciate it as well. And Jim, I just want to let you know, by the way, when I was a kid and I would constantly say to my mom, why? Well, she's very English. So usually her response was, bloody hell, Stephen, shut up, go away. So
I like your mother.
You've been listening to Happy Hour. Thank you so much, James, for joining us this morning. And we've got another segment on the way there, gang. gang, so stick with us. Segment number three is coming up. This is 92.9 WBPM.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
Hey, and welcome back to Happy Hour one more time here this morning for segment number three with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Tyler.
Oh, my God. I don't even know whose name you said there.
Carol said to do it really quick. All right, give it one more take. One more take.
No, I think what she meant was to start it quickly, not to...
Yeah.
Okay. With Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello,
Frankenberry.
That was the best one in the last number of weeks, so good for you, ladies. Very nicely done.
Okay.
Thanks so much to James for joining us. That was, man, what a well-spoken guy.
Oh, he's got a lot of information. I'm dying to get my hands on this book, so yeah, it's going to be really helpful. What a smart dude.
Oh, yeah.
And he must have been smart when he was a kid, too.
Exactly, with that story he told of his enterprise when he was seven.
Brilliant, yeah.
So before we go here this morning, Jonna, I know that you want to run for office on the ice cream truck platform, correct?
Ice cream / skinny margarita platform. Please get it right, Frankenberry.
My apologies. And then, Carol, what was yours? I forget.
I'm not running.
Didn't you have a platform?
No. He's going to drive the truck.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and you're going to be serving the ice cream and the skinny margaritas.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. So, but it made me think of something from my college days, my grad school days, where student body president, the elections were coming up. And at the time, I wrote a column, and it was a fairly popular column on campus, and it was two characters named Earl and Jam. Believe it or not, the column was actually called My Name is Earl, way before the TV show. But I decided, just to mess with people a little bit, that I was going to have Earl and Jam run for student body president, my two fictional characters. And if I remember correctly, I got over 800 votes.
That is insane.
That's great.
I mean, years later, I said to myself, wow, you're that third party guy that everybody hates. You know, but yes, that so I have run for office once, kind of.
Sort of.
That's a great story.
Yeah,
the fictional side of you has. And you got votes.
I got votes. People liked
crazy.
People liked my Earl and Jam. So, but anyway, you've all been listening to Happy Hour here this morning. And let's hit the Happy Father's Days, ladies.
Yeah, so today
Father's
Day. Happy Father's Day to my dad, John Spilbore. I figured, you know what I'm going to get him this year, you guys? Since he recently got stuck in a car wash, remember that story from a few weeks ago?
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna get him car wash coupons, and then I'm just like gonna put cross fingers on the card.
Very nice. Get him one of those gold books from Foam and Wash. Nice.
I'm gonna get him coupons and like a crowbar. Get out.
Oh, that's funny. I think he'd get a big laugh out of that. It's a good idea. So, yes, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Thoughts to my own who passed away years ago.
Aw.
And that's a wrap for this morning. So, ladies, thank you again for joining us. Audience, thanks for joining us as well. So, on a Father's Day here, everybody enjoy it and be safe.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.